Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. Find me on IG at Rambling and Gambling and email me ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Fun episode today. And actually, I'd really love some feedback on this one. Preston Johnson is on. He's the founder of Bets TV. Great guest, really smart dude. He's been insanely busy lately, and I know he hadn't had time to look into NFL stuff for this week specifically as much as he'd like. So we still did games and picks, but fewer than usual. And we did more of his background and gambling strategy, why you might want to bet college b-ball, some NBA, a really interesting Dame Lillard rumor, why you may want to bet more money sometimes, occasionally in certain situations. It was cool. I really enjoyed it. And I'd love to know what people think. Basically, if we should be doing more episodes like this or kind of stick to the original script. You'll see, we didn't go that far from what we normally do, but it was a little different and I had some fun. So let me know. And without further ado, here he is, Preston Johnson. Preston, we have been really lucky to have a lot of really interesting gamblers on this pod. You, however, are the very first person who stopped gambling in an effort to lose weight. How come and how's it going?
It is going. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's partly good and partly bad. I'll explain the good part. So January 1st, I was trying to set like New Year's resolutions like everyone else does. And I was like, you know what will really motivate me to lose? I wanted to lose 50 pounds is if I can't gamble, because theoretically I've done pretty well the last decade plus betting on sports and especially college football. And I was like, I have basically until the end of August, starting in January, to lose 50 pounds. Otherwise, I'm going to be costing myself quite a bit of money at that point. By the beginning, like mid-March, I lost half of it. I was great. I was in good shape. I was like down, I think it was down 24 was like where I got. And then I really took a dive into NFTs the beginning of the year. And then I started a project in March called Punk's Comic with two other partners. And it took so much of my time. And I stopped working out. I started eating worse again. And I just got super lazy. And so I gained like 5 pounds back. I think I'm down like 15 to 20 range as of now, but nowhere close to the 50. And so now here we are, middle of November, never got to 50. I still haven't been betting. I'm still running my numbers because I talk sports. I've stuck with the no betting part because that's what I told myself I would do. But I've still like tried to keep up on everything and run my numbers. I'm sharing with partners and friends and stuff so that they can bet. And so, of course, this college football season, just win every single week, just printing money all year. And I have 0 cents on the line. So it's been kind of funny, but I'm glad at least other people are winning. But it's until I get to 50, man, I've just been so, and I was telling you before we hit record, a couple other projects I'm working on. It just takes up a lot of my time that was just stuff I didn't foresee at the beginning of the year anyway. And so I got to stop being lazy about it, to be completely honest. That's still on me. But yeah, when I really was like set for it, I did 2.5 months. I lost half of it. Like I was on a good pace and I can do it. Like at least, you know, learn to myself like, hey, I can set a goal and reach it. I only did half of it though, but we'll finish it one of these days. Hopefully next year I'm back in the saddle.
Well, 15, 20 pounds, nothing to sneeze at. Congrats on that. Also, all the projects you have going on, that's got to be incredibly stressful. I don't know about you. I'm a stress eater. That's a really tough time to lose that kind of weight. 50 pounds, that's big time.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was COVID. So I used to play basketball like 3 times a week. I'd go to the gym when I was living in Las Vegas. I'd go to Lifetime and had poker friends I'd play with. And when COVID hit, it just like, that was my exercise most weeks. And then I had like zero exercise. So that I gained probably, I mean, I had some weight I could have lost anyway. And then I probably gained like 25 to 30. And that's when I was like, all right, I can drop 50, at least 40, but I made the goal for 50 and we'll get there eventually. But it is, man, it is stressful. It's one thing I've tried to do less exercise wise, but I've tried to just like mentally kind of be sharper and I've tried a few things. So I'm not sure, like, if you know what cryotherapy is.
Yeah, it went like really cold.
The icebox chambers, like LeBron has one in his house. He's talked about it before. He uses it every day. I've tried to do some stuff to keep my like mental game super refreshed just from optimizing, whether it be betting or business, whatever. That's been super helpful. I do like float tanks where you kind of zen out, kind of like meditation stuff. So I've tried to like capitalize on those opportunities, which is good. I just need to get the physical part down again, like I did at the beginning of the year.
Interesting stuff. So you are this real outside of the box thinker. And that kind of brings me to where I wanted to go off the top here, which is your background. You've made some really bold moves, man. Stop me if I get anything wrong, but you were at ESPN as a betting analyst. This is the spot tons and tons of people dream of being. And then you choose to leave. I believe they wanted to keep you, and you leave. You start Betts TV. You build out a full studio in California. It looks amazing. And here you are now. How did you decide to go down that path? And also, just in case any of our listeners don't know, can you give me a little bit about what you guys are doing over at Betts TV?
Sure. So yeah, we can just start with the background and then I'll get into that. It was weird because I was just betting for the longest time. And then when legalization happened nationwide and the states were starting to kind of govern it themselves, ESPN reaches out. They're like, hey, we're going to be in Las Vegas interviewing people. We're launching a new show. We heard about this cheetah guy. We figured while we're here, we should talk to you. I was like, sure. So I met with them the next day. They had 12 other people they were interviewing and like added me just last second. And then a week later, they called back and said, hey, we really liked you. Can you come out to Bristol and meet some of the executives and we'll talk more? Now, it took like 10 months for Disney to greenlight Daily Wager to actually allow the show to happen. It took some time. So I was just kind of hanging tight until then. So, it was all new and I had done a few podcasts or radio spots, but I'd never done TV. So, like you said, and even as like a kid in high school, I was like doing journalism. I wanted to be Stuart Scott, Scott Van Pelt. Like those were my idols. I mean, you're kind of in a similar track yourself, right? Like once you get to ESPN, it's like, all right, you've made it. And so that's kind of how I felt like, and it was really fun, had a blast. And so the arrogant part of this is that when my contract ended after 2 years, I was like, all right, thanks, but no thanks. I'm gone. And it sounds horrible, but ultimately the decision was pretty easy because and they did offer me another contract, contrary to popular belief on Twitter that I got kicked out for someone else. But
I did my research. I did not believe that was the case.
Oh, so you asked around and made sure it was like, look, the fact of the matter is like Disney laid off like 1,000 people last year, right? Like it was tough. And so unless they were going to offer me a lot more money, I just was like, you know, for the amount of time, I'll tell you this, it was pretty exhausting because someone that was already betting, my value to them was I needed to make sure all my betting stuff was still super sharp. And that's like, I was doing like 60, 70 hours a week on that because there's so much going on weekends. And then now I'm doing TV 6 days a week and writing 3 articles a week. Like it was just like, I felt like I was doing 2 jobs and it was hard for me to foresee that ahead of time. And then they were paying me like I was a full-time salary or, you know, employee. So it all made sense on their end that I needed to do all that. So it was just like, I needed to step back and allow myself some flexibility. So when my contract ended in February and I was starting to get into NFTs and some crypto stuff, the bets in the NFT space at the beginning of this year were just way more asymmetrical than even sports bets. And that was like, there's just way too much to pass up on there. So I left, started my own thing here with Betts TV because I can kind of just go into the studio on my own near my house. Each day, it's, you know, a couple hours a day, but it's a lot less stressful than being on ESPN, being on air, having to write a bunch of articles. So it allowed me to put some time and focus on some other projects as well. And it's been good. It was perfect decision. Been happy, totally cool with all the ESPN people. They were super genuine, super nice. Multiple people reached out like, sorry we lost you, man. Like it's total loss on our end. Like everyone, any name you could think of, like I feel like they went out of their way to make me feel a part of it for being a small, like new time sports betting kid. And so that always meant a lot to me. And I know it's not always the case. Like there's always, I feel like stories about people backstabbing on that side of the industry and you're probably used to hearing stuff. Like, I didn't get that vibe at all. I thought it was really great. So I appreciate everyone over there if they're listening and for their friendship.
How have you felt after making this leap, going out on your own, doing Betts TV?
It's been good, man. It's difficult. Like you run into, like, for example, we got someone to build our studio that didn't do a great job the first time we got it built out, like the contractor himself. And so we had like a month we were redoing some stuff and getting things sorted out. And like, you just run into obstacles you're not anticipating when you're like, hey, let's build a studio and do a show. But the one thing I really wanted to focus on, by the time, you know, this year was rolling, February, March was hitting, sports betting's blowing up. It's legal in like almost half the states, whatever the number is. Everyone's doing the same exact type of show. Everyone's like, all right, here's game A. I like it because of X, Y, and Z. All right, here's the next game. I like it because of X, Y, and Z. It's like I'd been doing that for years anyway. And I wanted to try to do something that was just more entertaining and engaging with the audience. And so there's no sports betting show that actually takes calls from anybody. That's what we do for Last Word Cheetah. That's like my main show. We take your calls. You talk through the bets that you like. You might have questions for me about certain games. You just can tell us which games you're betting yourself. Then we track them. We have a leaderboard. We give away cash every month to the top callers. And so just being able to engage with an audience, still like drop some nuggets that are super informative and helpful from like an analytics or betting standpoint, but just not having the stress of you're on ESPN. You have 45 seconds to explain why you love this. Right. And that's it. And then we're cutting you off. And it's like, holy cow, like 45 seconds. Like I'm used to doing podcasts where I have like an hour to talk through stuff. So that was difficult. This is a little easier, more laid back, you know, just like kind of the podcast vibe we're having here. And it's been a lot of fun. And we've built like a really good core. Like we have like the same 20 to 25 callers that call every day or two. And they're just having a ton of fun. They're all friendly. We had one caller, first time this has ever happened in sports betting media history. I was out of town. I was in New York and London last week. One of the callers flew in literally at the desk, hosted my show. And he's just a regular caller. He hosted the show for an hour with my co-host and producer Quan and had a blast. And he was one of our callers that like, if there were like five that I would allow to do it, he was one of them. Just because you can tell when they're discussing things, he does his own numbers for like KBO, Korean baseball, college football. And so I was like, all right, he could handle this. So he came in, hosted a show. It was a blast. We're just kind of having some more fun with it, right? It's not as like, here's all the analytics all the time. This is why I like the game. All right, let's get to the next game. Let's get to the next game. So that's kind of what we wanted to hit. And that's what we're trying to build.
I enjoy it. Last Word Cheetah reminds me of all the best parts of like old school sports talk radio in a way, which I mean is a huge compliment. I used to be in sports talk radio. It was as an intern, but it was my favorite job ever. And I think you guys do an amazing job. Last one, before we get to some of these games, and then we're going to circle back because I have a lot more questions about you, your background, all that coming at the end of this. But before we get to the games, can you give me a quick rundown of how you come up with what you are going to bet? This pod is primarily for casual recreational gamblers, but I always like hearing how the real deal guys like yourself do it. So for instance, are you mainly statistical model, so on and so forth?
Yep. It's a model based on a ton of stats and kind of the market, what the market tells us every week, right before games kick off or tip off. I do basketball and football primarily, both college and pro. I do baseball too until, look, I lost my edge in baseball probably about two seasons ago and just haven't bothered since. So at least was smart enough to realize that baseball is just tough. It's super analytical anyway. And then all the stats are out there now. And it's just like, if you're not hitting like openers that are a little softer, it's just tough to beat baseball the day of. So anyways, kind of a little sidetrack, but I built models a while ago, use those, basically compare my projections to the market. And if there's a discrepancy, I bet it accordingly. And so it's pretty straightforward in that sense. Occasionally I'll get some information about an injury or a quarterback that's going to miss or that's not practicing that the public doesn't know about, can take advantage there. So some information stuff does play a role, but never betting like trends, like this team or this game goes over, you know, 69% of the time the last 4 years on Monday night. Like that stuff's pretty noisy. There's not a ton of signal. I've walked by roulette tables in Vegas that are 18 straight reds, like just in your, I get it, things happen. Like it's just, that's what variance is. And so, very analytically driven. And started as team-based rankings that I had to mold about 5 or 6 years ago. I switched my MBA to a player-based model because the team-based ones just weren't good enough to beat the market anymore. And then did similar with football about 2.5 years ago just to try to up my edge there. And it's been fun being able to kind of learn as I've gone. And to be honest, it's really tough for people, like you're saying, you're kind of approaching the casual better. Most people just can't go build a model and try to beat sports. So there's still some stuff I think to be done, whether it be informational or just following like what a coach is saying post game and how practice stuff is going from local beat writers, like follow a couple teams or a conference, really dive in there. And, you know, especially like college basketball where there's some bigger edges, I think, just in general with all the schools, a lot of the changeover, especially early in the season, like right now, you know, people are crushing the first week or two of college basketball just because there's so many teams. Totals are pretty weak, especially if you're not trying to bet thousands and thousands of dollars. Limits aren't a concern. So there's definitely some opportunity for casuals to like hone in on a certain subset of a league or a conference or whatever it may be. So I don't want to scare anyone off, but ultimately, like if you're trying to like make a living, you need to have, I think, some stuff modeled out that gives you a really good base of what's happening. And for a last thing I'll say on top of that, closing market numbers for people that just don't really look at those or care, you should. That gives you a good gauge. You don't need a model to look and be like, hey, this team closed a 3-point favorite against this team. The next week they play different teams, but now there's like 2 weeks later, why is this team pick against this other team when they like, there's ways to just kind of gauge and analyze the market a little bit that if you don't have a model, it's still super valuable. You know, track injuries, obviously. So if there's no like huge injury, you can see like, okay, well, why is the market here 1 or 2 weeks later in a football game when 2 weeks ago I was here? It just gives you a good sense of, okay, like here's a good example. Sorry, I'm kind of rambling, but this is good.
Ramble. I love it. This podcast is called Rambling.
It is.
Gambling.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. There we go. Plugged it for you. Rams 49ers. I didn't hear anyone that liked the Niners. Everyone was tweeting about how are the Rams only -3.5. Everyone remembered that the 49ers 2 weeks prior got crushed by Colt McCoy and the Cardinals. Actually, it was 1 week prior because they got the Monday night game. So they got crushed by Colt McCoy and no Hopkins, no Kyler Murray Cardinals. Then they watched the Cardinals lose by 30 at home, that same Cardinals team to the Panthers. And then everyone's like, wow, are the Rams only -3.5? Look, the 49ers are still pretty good. Defense is pretty good. Shanahan's always done really well against McVay. Their defenses have. No Woods. Robert Woods got injured. So OBJ was coming in for the Rams. There's probably going to be some sort of drop off there, at least initially. But all we heard about was, you know, how are the Rams only -3.5? That's because people only remember like the last week or two. But when you really, if you have a good base of like and knowledge of where the market should be, closing markets throughout the season, or if you have some numbers to refer to, like 3.5 was a pretty fair number in a vacuum, in my opinion. I know some people that actually thought it should have been lower and bet the Niners. So as I started asking around more, so it was an interesting way, but that's just like, I think a good example of, it was a super trappy game, but like people that just have context of a week or two, you can't just do it with that. You can't just like eye test. The Rams have looked a lot better than the Niners and look at the Cardinals like transitive property. Like it just doesn't work that way. And so, yeah, that's just what I wanted to throw out there for people to kind of give them some context.
Very helpful stuff. And on that note, let's do a few week 11 lines. I've got 5 or 6 for you. I'm going to give you a game, the odds, and just take it absolutely anywhere you want to go. Preston, we don't have to spend a ton of time on each game. There's absolutely zero pressure to make a pick or anything like that. Just give me whatever you want to give me. I know I'm catching you early in a very busy week. So truthfully, let's just talk shop here. No big deal. And by the way, for all the listeners, all these lines that I'm giving out are from FanDuel as of early Tuesday afternoon. First up, Dallas at KC. Chiefs favored by 2.5, over under 55.5. Cowboys 7-2, just crushed the Falcons 43-3. Meanwhile, Chiefs are now 6-4. And after plenty of talk about how the sky was falling in KC, would the Chiefs even make the playoffs? Well, they're back up top, leading the AFC West by one game in the win column over the Chargers and the Raiders. Preston, what do you think?
And so this one comes down, I think, ultimately to what you think of the Chiefs, which is obvious. They're the home team. They're the favorite. What we saw last week, like against the Raiders, it's like finally the Mahomes throws was a 5 TDs. After a month of just weirdness, like is Mahomes the most overrated quarterback of all time? Like the perceptions and stuff is just, it's just crazy to see how they change publicly just in the general media sense from week to week, which sometimes you can capitalize on as a better. So this is one where I never thought that KC, despite their like cold month, was like way worse than like the teams the last few years. So I'm not surprised by the result last night. I think a lot of people, and I had one in a Discord thread for my show, already asked, why did the Dallas line move from 1.5 to 2.5? To be completely honest, like the Chiefs are a better team on a neutral field than Dallas. The last few years, I know home field hasn't meant as much in the NFL as it used to, but Arrowhead, like KC, it's a tough place to play. I think 2.5 juiced closer to the 3, maybe it even gets to 3, is totally fair. And so, I mean, people forget, like just 2 weeks ago after they crushed Atlanta, like they were down 30-0 at home to the Denver Broncos. So it's not like Dallas is somehow like this elite like behemoth NFL team. And what's great about this NFL year is there isn't really a team that's like set themselves apart. Even Tampa Bay, right? They've fumbled like back-to-back weeks, I believe. They've lost games that they should have won. Buffalo has the weird game in Jacksonville that they lose. They can only score 6 points. Baltimore loses to Miami. Like, there's all of these games, just strange results that, look, this is pretty up in the air as far as who can take over. And Dallas certainly isn't like a team that I would like count on being better than Kansas City halfway through a season. So I think the Lions fair. If anything, I'd expect it to move to three. So if you do like Dallas, I think maybe at some point this week you could get a plus three, just kind of reading the market. But yeah, I'd stay away at the current price. I think it's pretty close.
Possibly meaningless stat I'll throw out there for the listeners, Preston.
Okay.
The Cowboys are among the best in the league against the spread this season. They're 8-1 ATS. Do you know the only team that's better?
The Packers.
Nailed it, man. I knew you'd have it. 9-1 Green Bay Packers. Speaking of, they are in Minnesota this weekend, given 2.5. The over-under is 49. This is an interesting one. Aaron Rodgers is back. Packers are 8-2. Don't sleep on that defense. This is from Mike Renner of PFF. The Packers just held Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, and Russell Wilson to 34 combined points over the last 3 weeks. Some injuries in there, but still, it's holding some good quarterbacks to next to nothing. As for the Vikings, they're now 4-5, but they are coming off a pretty nice road win against the Chargers. You have anything on this one, Preston?
So I think that how much do we believe in this Packers defense? Because that's kind of been their fault even the last few years.
Yeah.
Since we had Aaron Rodgers kind of like, he had a bad year, was it two or three years ago? And then he kind of came back and he's been fantastic last year, obviously, with the MVP. They haven't been able to do anything in the playoffs, I think, just because their defense has been slightly below average. I'm looking right now because I'm just curious, their success rate grades, run and pass, like they haven't been good against the run. And they're still grading out about league average against the pass. What's weird is that teams aren't scoring against them. Now, a lot of times that's a little fluky. We had one of the examples I like to give, shifting to college football a little bit, UCLA and Chip Kelly last year. It was a weird season, COVID season. They didn't play a full schedule. It was either 6 or 7 games, I think. But they had the biggest discrepancy in the history of my data in college football as far as their success rate was they were like 107th defensively. Yet the amount of points they allowed had them like a top 10 defense. They just were not even close. They were like well below average. You've seen some regression this year in that regard. I'm not saying Green Bay is going to regress super hard or anything, but their defense, as far as the points their opponents are scoring, definitely is overachieving relative to some of the underlying metrics. Mm-hmm. So when you say like, when you look at some of the numbers, like just kind of that are general macro Green Bay defense numbers, are like top 4 or 5 and a lot of them, I don't think that's really the case. I don't think they're a top 5 defense personally. You can look at EPA and success rate and kind of get a better gauge of where they're at. So with that being said, what's wrong with the, this is the other question for you. Sorry, I'm loading up a screen real quick.
Take your time.
What did you say the number was for you? It was 2.5, right?
2.5. Yeah.
So what do you get from Minnesota is like 1 week they're upsetting teams as dogs. And then when they're big favorites, they're losing out, right? Like they're pretty back and forth as a team. I'll say my number. I know I told you before we went on air that I haven't updated my entire NFL stuff for this week, but based on last week before Minnesota and Green Bay took down their wins, I'm just looking real quick. Almost there. I would have this at 2.9. So I think it's pretty fair. There's probably gonna be a lot of people using the Vikings in a teaser because they just remember, hey, the Vikings have played in like 7 1 score games already. You can tease them up to 8.5. You're getting through the 3 and the 7, which historically is a profitable teaser option. So I wouldn't be against that. But from a point spread perspective, and not just because the Packers are 9-1 ATS, the 2.5 is pretty close. I think, outside of a teaser option, I'd just stay away.
By the way, the Vikings, just half a game out of a playoff spot right now, believe it or not. At 4-5, they're right in the thick of the wild card race. The 5-5 Panthers actually hold that last spot at the moment, as crazy as that may seem. San Francisco and Atlanta also half a game back. Cincy, given 1 in Vegas, over under 49. Cincy's 5-4, lost to the Browns 2 weeks ago, then had a bye. So they've got a nice little rest advantage in this one. The Raiders also 5-4. They played Sunday night, losing to the Chiefs.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and take a look real quick. Sorry, one second. I have, so the bye week's obviously something you have to consider. That's a rest advantage on the Cincinnati side. I have on a neutral, I have Cincinnati about 2 points better than Vegas. So with the bye added in, and plus, honestly, the Raiders probably are going to get a downgrade once I update my weekend numbers because of their performance against Kansas City on Sunday night. So if anything, I would say if you can get pick on Cincy, it's probably slight value, but not enough to fire anything. That's just kind of my assessment here on that. I'm not sure. Kind of like the Green Bay defense, this is like the hole I dig myself into a lot of the times. I'm like, hey, Green Bay's defense, they're not as good as they've shown. Probably a good chance that they regress. Let's look to fade Green Bay. And then the market kind of is usually smarter and smart enough to realize like we're not getting plus 3.5 on Minnesota. It's only 2.5, right? Like they kind of already know. So my number already assuming Green Bay is going to regress defensively thinks the 2.5 juiced on the Green Bay side is pretty much fair. This is another one like, yeah, maybe I'd have Cincinnati more like a 1.5 or 2 point favorite, but at pick -1, it's just not a big enough discrepancy that's worth betting. The market's usually smarter than just like the kind of natural regression candidates. Now, Cincinnati's definitely outperformed and overachieved relative to what I expected going into the year. So they deserve credit for that. I'm just not much of a believer as like a actual playoff contender or anything like that. So typically it would be a team I'd look to fade, but not off of a bye with a Raiders team that's just been all over the place off the field too this year. Just got to stay away from this one.
This is great. No, that is exactly what we want. We just want what you are really thinking, man. Time to the Thursday nighter. And I'm more interested in the stat that comes with this than the game, to be honest with you. But New England given 6.5 in Atlanta, over under 47. Falcons 4-5, lost to the Cowboys last week. The Pats now 6-4. They're the winners of 4 straight, most recently against the Browns. And here's that stat I mentioned. It kind of blew me away. And I don't know. You tell me what you think, Preston. Maybe it's a flawed stat in some way. I'm not sure. But get a load of this.
Okay.
Pro Football Focus has Mac Jones as the 5th highest rated quarterback. And he's not the only guy on this top five that surprised me. PFF's top five right now is Brady, no surprise. Cousins at number 2. Tannehill, Herbert, and then Jones. What do you make of that?
Okay, so I'm not sure if you listened to this show we had last week. We actually had a caller call in and say on air as he was liking the Pats against the Browns this last week, he said that he thought Mac Jones was a top 5 quarterback in the NFL right now, not future top 5,
right now.
And I stopped the show and I was just like, all right, hold on a second. We need to talk about this. And we went through like quarterbacks, who would you take, him or Mac Jones? And then they crushed the Browns by like 40. He just keeps moving up everyone's rankings. He might be top 10. PFF has him number 5 now. That's insane. Look, Bill Belichick's part of it. Obviously, they just have a great system set up in Mac Jones, and like what his strengths are perfect, like kind of skill set for that type of offense and what the Pats are doing. I will say this, like this moved a bunch. Like this opened 4.5. It's pushing 7 some books.
Yeah.
And this happened last week. It was down to as low as pick basically. And then Pats close 2.5 and was pushing a 3 against Cleveland. And it's like, okay, so this Pats team must be for real. I'll be honest, on a neutral, before the results of the Browns game, because again, I need to update my Sunday number still in my model, I would have made the Pats about 7.5 points better than Atlanta on a neutral. Now Atlanta gets crushed. The Pats crush the Browns. That's actually probably going to be more like 8.5 now. And they're on the road. So to see this go towards 7, honestly, it's probably pretty fair. And by the way, one thing we should point out, you always hear like home field, how many points is it worth?
Yeah.
If I have it around 8.5 on a neutral, you know, the difference between, say, you're giving like 2 points for home field, 8.5 and 6.5 is from a win probability perspective, because 7 is such a key number, is way higher than the difference between like, say, 9.5 and 7.5, where 8 and 9 aren't really key numbers. So the 2 points thing, or 3 points for home field that people generally refer to, is kind of, it's pretty noisy in general. Really, it's like, all right, what's their home probability increase for playing at home? And then you kind of adjust that. So while I have this at 8.5, and maybe if I thought Atlanta's home field was worth 2 points, it would never get to 6.5, because that's just like such a big gap. So 7's probably a lot closer to fair, if not even a little higher than that. So I'm not betting the Patriots, but if you can get the 6.5s out there that are still in the market. I wouldn't be surprised if this just ends up settling a flat 7. And honestly, they deserve it. And I don't know how this guy knew Mac Jones is a top 5 QB, but apparently he is. I don't get it. I never would have anticipated this, but here we are. Yeah.
Washington football team at Carolina. Carolina favored by 3.5, over under 43. Preston, you probably don't know this. I'm a Washington fan. I recently swore I was done betting on the WFTs for the season. I swore it twice. Once I went back on it and lost a bunch of money. I did not go back on it last week. So, of course, they went out and beat the defending Super Bowl champs. They now sit at 3-6. That last 10.5-minute drive, it was insane. I mean, I love seeing it as a fan. Panthers 5-5, just knocked off the mighty Cardinals minus Kyler Murray. And, of course, the big story with this one is that Cam is back. It's also a reunion of sorts because Ron Rivera, Washington football team coach, will be back in Carolina this week too. Have anything on this one?
I don't know what to expect from Cam. I'll be completely honest. Sometimes you just got to like throw your hands up and get some data. I'm not sure what to expect with this whole Carolina reunion. The line, the market has gone from 2.5 to 3.5. I'm just checking multiple books right now. Like, I'll tell you this. I think I should probably be taking 3.5, but then what's the value to, is it Chase Young, I believe, right? That injured towards ACL. He's out for the year. Like, that's pretty significant for a defense that everyone was right wasn't as good as they looked last year. There's been some regression, but there's still, you know, let me look at my defensive ratings real quick based on last week's numbers. You know, they're really good against the run. They haven't defended the pass very well. So now losing Chase Young, it's like, how is their, they're grading a slightly below average defense right now for me. So now if they're an actual below average defense, like, you can only do so much with Heinicke at quarterback, although somehow he like gets enough done where it keeps you guys in games for the most part. I'll just say I would take the 3.5 if there weren't so many extra variables that I just prefer not to gamble on, which, like, how is Cam Newton's reunion here in Carolina going to be treated? What's the defense going to look like without Chase Young? So I'd rather pass, get a couple of games under my belt to make decisions for future weeks. But from a numbers perspective, I think the 3.5, like, if you had to bet this game, getting the hook. Look, Washington's still a relatively decent team. Rivera, yeah, there's so much going on like the off-field stuff. It's such an interesting matchup. So I would take the 3.5 if you made me, but I'd prefer to just wait and see what happens here with all of the newness on each side of the football.
Okay, let's just do one more game. We'll make it quick because I do want to have two other segments with you if you've got time, and I think those will be interesting. Sure. New Orleans at Philly. Philly favored by 1.5, over under 44. Saints 5-4, just lost to the Titans. Eagles 4-6, just beat the Broncos, also still in the thick of things for one of those NFC wild cards. And Preston, ESPN's Mike Clay tweeted that the Eagles have the easiest remaining schedule in the NFC, which I thought was interesting.
It is interesting. Definitely helps. I know there were some people talking about like Philadelphia playoff odds before this last week. The problem is this. So they're dead last in success rate against the pass, I believe. And against the run, they're probably about league average. But one thing I do know, the Saints are number one against the run. And what's kind of helped Philadelphia these last, I think the last four games, they've rushed for about 700 yards in an era where people don't really rush the football very often, right? Like, they're rushing for whatever that is, 175 yards a game. They're probably not going to be able to do that against the Saints defense, right? So then how much can you put on Jalen Hurts' shoulders through the air? He's not the most accurate. Like, there's some question marks there. Now, I think people in general want to buy this Philadelphia team as being relevant, obviously, of the injuries at quarterback on the New Orleans side. So, like, I mean, I actually, one of the bets I liked last weekend was the under in the Saints-Titans game, especially there was rumors about Tannehill and not practicing and that he might have even missed the game. One of the players was saying they trust Logan Woodside if it comes down to that. And then on top of the fact that the Saints were, you know, dealing without their quarterback. So putting all that together, I'll say I have Philadelphia, a small favorite. I think the 1.5s in the market are pretty close to fair. There's some 44s on the total. I think I would look that direction. I'm not sure how Philadelphia runs against this Saints defense. And obviously the Saints offense has struggled quite a bit. And Kamara was out last week too. And if he's out again, you know, that's a big piece of what they're trying to do offensively, even outside of the quarterback issues. So that's the look in that game. I'd say of any of the ones we talked about, under in New Orleans, Philadelphia seems pretty good. So, we can leave it with that.
That's interesting. Okay, because that was actually the last one I was going to come back to. If you felt comfortable, and if not, that's fine. I always ask, do you have one pick that stands out to you right now? It sounds like it's under 44, New Orleans, Philly, with the caveat being that you still have to run your numbers, which is totally understandable.
Sure. Most of the market's 43.5, so that's a significant difference, to be honest. But at 43.5, I still have it as a winnable bet. My projection before running last weekend's numbers, which aren't going to really change much from the total perspective, is closer to 42. It's like 41.8. So I think under the ones we discussed, there's a lot of upside there. And I just think the actual matchup for, look, you're Philadelphia. You're like, man, we've had all this success running the football. They're going to try to run the football. That's just what they've been doing. And honestly, they played some of the slowest first half football. I think the Saints play at the slowest rate in the first halves of NFL games in the entire league. Philadelphia is in the top half, and they're both going to be trying to run because they have, you know, it's just the matchup's really conducive of an under. So maybe first half under is a better look in general. If you dig in versus the 44.5 and 43.5 for the game, you can do a 21. There's a few 21.5s out there for first half. So something in that range, maybe a little bit on both, is worthwhile.
All right, Preston, it is time for a segment that we had been calling Josh's Juice. Basically, I'm going to give you a bet I'm thinking about making, and I want you to tell me what you think. I'm excited for this because you do a ton of this type of thing already with Bets TV. We talked about it. You're really good at it. However, before we get there, a little backstory. Josh's Juice, the name, it stinks. I know that. Everybody knows that. Not a good name. We had listeners send some suggestions in a few weeks ago. They didn't work. One was Sawbucks for Squares. So we just stuck with Josh's Juice. Now, though, I think we may have a winner. It's simple. It's easy. And I want your honest opinion on it. Be real with me, man. Here it is, courtesy of my friend Mark. Long shot or lock? That's it. You tell me. Is it a long shot or a lock? What do you think?
So there's no such thing as a lock, which I know you're not trying to like literally do, but that's like the one of the one things that I like, everyone always asks, what's the lock of, you know, for you tomorrow or this weekend? And it's like, I bet on stuff that I think loses 45% of the time, which is just a good way to think about it though. Like that's just like, we're trying to get the 1 or 2% edge and bet it. And long term, we hope that it pays off. So I love betting on long shots though. I think the name's good. It's catchy. So from a media perspective, segments.
That's all this is.
I like media, it. But don't actually, for people listening, think there's such thing as a lock. Anything can happen. It's gambling still in the end.
Okay. Fair point. Nevertheless, here we go with the very first ever metaphorical, but not literal, yes. Long shot or lock. I'm going back to the two-team 6-point teaser well this week. First team, and we've kind of talked about these already, so feel free to just crush it. But I like to go through my logic and have an expert kind of pick it apart anyway.
Sure.
I like the Cowboys. They're getting 2.5 in Kansas City, so we're moving them to +8.5. That means we're going through the 3 and the 7. We talked about how the Cowboys have been absolutely crushing it against the spread this year. The Chiefs have now won 3 straight, but those wins were against the Raiders, an okay team, as well as the Jordan Love-led Packers and the Giants. I think there's still big-time problems on D for the Chiefs, so I think the boys kind of carve them up. And I don't bet trends a lot, but there are a few working in the Cowboys' favor here, including this. Short road dogs getting 3 or fewer points are 16-7 against the spread this season. Team 2, I'm worried this one looks a little too easy, but I'm taking the Bills. They're given 7.5 points at home against the Colts, so I'm moving to -1.5. Again, we're going through the 7 and the 3. The Colts are up to 5 wins on the year, but here's who they've beaten. Jags, Jets, Niners, Texans, Dolphins, nobody. Meanwhile, the Bills are number 1 in DVOA after their Week 10 win against the Jets. I just think they're a way better team, and I like them to pick up the win at home. So I have the Bills -1.5 and the boys +8.5. Preston, is it a metaphorical long shot or lock? Hold on, Preston. I'm sorry. I can't hear you all of a sudden.
Oh, I muted myself while I coughed, and then I forgot to unmute. That's, okay. That's on me, man. I just said certainly not a long shot.
Nice.
Because teasers are, you know, basically, I mean, you're doing a profitable teaser in theory. So I would have to say lock, unfortunately, even though it's not an actual lock. Don't get too crazy, whoever's listening and betting this. But one thing to note, Buffalo, I'm not, you said feel free to crush it. I'm not going to crush your pick. It's good. But a lot of the Buffalo Indianapolis spreads are 7 flat. And one thing that's just worth noting again for some context for people that are trying to learn, you have to go through 3 and 7 to try to get a profitable teaser. But if you can get a -7 on Buffalo, you're actually better off just betting Buffalo -7 than doing a teaser with Buffalo and a second leg. It happens a lot with like the +2.5, for example, on Dallas. You're better off actually betting +3. Now there's no +3s that exist on Dallas, but sometimes people will tease like a +2.5 or a +3 up to 9, thinking it's the same thing. You really want to get one that's like the market is saying it's for sure 7.5 or maybe 8, 8.5, and teasing it down. Right now you can get Buffalo -7. Theoretically, that's actually a better bet. And I don't disagree much. I actually think that's the right side slightly. I have it closer to 7.5 based on my numbers before last weekend. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there that when people are doing teases, it's like get through the 3 and the 7, but make sure you can't just get the flat key number as a straight side bet, because long-term that's actually going to be more profitable than teasing one that if you shopped around, you could just get a better number. So hopefully I articulated that well, but
you definitely did. And that is exactly the type of advice that I'm hoping to get in this segment. So that was great. Just to be clear, would you recommend then, even though you don't think that this is a long shot per se, scrapping the tease and just taking Buffalo -7?
If you can get a Buffalo -7, -110, that's better than teasing it. At like, because like 7.5 is like the worst Buffalo price. I guess that's another way to look at it, right? Like, and you look at the whole market, 7.5 is the worst Bills number. So why would you tease that one down? And you know, at the very least, tease it down from 7 to 1. But when you're doing that, you're better off just laying the 7. So that's something that I would recommend. What I would really recommend if you wanted to adjust it a little bit,
yeah,
is just scrapping the Buffalo side altogether. Say you tease Dallas up to 8.5, and then you find another one that fits the bill, like the Saints up to 7.5, or like the Seattle Seahawks at home to 8+8.5. They're playing the Cardinals. Those are other options that I think would be better than Buffalo, just from a sheer market pricing standpoint.
Okay, gotcha. So it's not necessarily that you think the Cards have an edge in the game. It's just the prices, because they're +2.5 right now. You feel like I would derive more value from moving that by 6 points,
yeah,
than the alternative.
Teasing Buffalo from 7.5 to 1.5 when like 90% of the books are just 7, it's just not going to pay off as well. You'd better off just betting -7 at the other books. So I know FanDuel's like, I don't know if they're the official sponsor or not. I know we didn't talk prior. You're referencing the FanDuel lines. They're 7.5. That's totally fine. But obviously, you're not going to win if you're not shopping around. And that's one that I would say you could adjust slightly, is move the Buffalo leg to another one and just find the 7s on Buffalo if you like that side and just bet it straight.
Fantastic advice. And typically, I actually put in teasers at DraftKings anyway, because 2-team 6 points -120. I think FanDuel is like -134.
Worst price. Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Before we wrap this up, you have time for some semi-quick hitters?
Yeah, we can do it.
Let's do it, man. I know you're a big NBA guy. We're a few weeks into the season. Any insights, teams you like, betting opportunities, whatever?
Ooh. All right. Betting opportunities. Look, I think maybe that this isn't like great information. That's for sure. Lock it in. But I heard that when the Blazers GM resigned, there's a pretty good chance, I think, that Lillard ends up in Philadelphia for Ben Simmons. Like, we're trying to figure out what this saga is going to be. And there's a chance Daryl Morey now ends up with a brand new regime in Portland saying, we'll take Ben Simmons, a couple of young guys with him and picks, and we're resetting. They might even trade McCollum too elsewhere. Like, they can do whatever they want. They're also below 500, I think, so far. So it's not like they're really making a push to do it now. So I actually had someone I know bet 35-1. There was a 35-1, and I think it was at Circa in Vegas, while the majority of the market's more like 25-1. But if they get Lillard, look, they've been so good anyways. And then they had some COVID stuff, and you know, they've been playing without a few guys the last couple of games. But I think that's probably the best, like, you're trying to price uncertainty, pricing the chances they get Lillard, pricing the chances if they don't get Lillard, they trade Ben Simmons at all, chance that Ben Simmons actually just plays eventually. You mold all that in. Like, there's no Kyrie with Brooklyn. Milwaukee's been injured and like, you know, it's like they're elite, even though they won it all last year. Like Philadelphia is in that mix, and pricing it according to the other teams or relative to the other teams. I think it's a worthwhile gamble on the chance that their roster significantly improves with another star. So that's, I guess, the one I would say that came to mind first, just because I had someone I know bet it like on Thursday or Friday last week when that news broke about Portland's GM.
That's kind of a little bit of a bombshell there, Preston. You must feel really good about your sourcing on that.
No, it's not official at all. That's why I'm trying to like get across. I'm betting on like the 25%, 33% chance it does happen, right? It doesn't mean I think, like, more often than not, it probably won't. But I think the odds increase quite a bit that Lillard's traded at all. And like, who's the next best person that Portland's going to bring in that they could theoretically build around, also bring in young guys and also bring in picks? Like, there's just not another candidate that matches what Philly could do. And Philly's trying to get rid of Ben Simmons, clearly. Like, guy's not even playing. That just makes too much sense to me. And so I'm trying to bet on how do you quantify that percentage of the time that they have Lillard? Because if they got Lillard, they're going to be right there with like Milwaukee and Brooklyn. And they're like, you know, 6-7, maybe 5-1 to win it all. The East, they're like 2.5-1. And right now you could get, you know, 25-35-1. So it's, yeah, it's just like a certain amount of the time, they're going to be way better than the current price. Also a certain amount of the time, I still think they're a little bit better than they're currently priced. And then another amount of the time, they're going to be like exactly where they're at. And you kind of have like a break-even bet. And like that, so the upside is just way higher than the downside, I guess, at this current price, that it was worthwhile to play. So yeah, I hope I articulated that well too. It's kind of a unique bet because it's not like, oh, Lillard's going to Philadelphia, I have to hurry and bet it. But it's like he if he gets traded, and now the signs are that he might, it's probably to Philadelphia.
Gotta ask, you're a Lakers fan, right?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I grew up here. Yeah.
Okay. I'm a Wizards fan. I grew up here.
I just finished texting people about this last night. I'm going to go to the thread. Finish your thought. I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Well, what do you think about the Westbrook trade?
Well, I'm on record multiple sources before the season started. Lakers season wins under. Can't believe they did this trade. Is it a poker thread? Let me find it. Because there's the main event, day six, was last night. I got to scroll up a little bit. But my buddy, he's a Wizards fan. Shout out Christian Harder. He's a poker player. So some people might know who he is. But he basically was just needling me, like, made a comment about Russell Westbrook. The Lakers were down like 30 to the Bulls. And I think I made a comment about Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso, former Lakers.
Yeah.
And defensively. And then he just like was like, oh, and the Russ trade, like, I still can't believe what they gave. Like, the guys, KCP, Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, who was just a sixth man the year prior.
And a first.
Like, those guys are all flourishing in Washington while Russ is just like trying to hold his own without LeBron in LA. Like, it's a mess, man. You guys got Russ for John Wall and somehow flipped it into a first and three guys that are at least competent NBA players.
Yeah.
And that goes a long way for a team that's like, honestly, you guys are pretty deep. And Beal hasn't even been playing, right, for like 2 weeks.
He missed the last couple of games for personal reasons. His numbers overall for the season, while still good, are not as good as Bradley Beal's numbers typically are. There's a lot of excitement. I'm a hard news reporter. That's like what my actual job is. I don't actually do sports. I just do this pod. But last night I pitched a story about how people are actually into the Wizards this season, because that's not typically the case in DC. It's a football town, a little bit more of a college basketball town. They went for it. People were going crazy at the game last night. It was fantastic. Yes. Which was
centered. Dinwiddie's been fantastic.
Like, Dinwiddie's been great. I mean, we're like a real competent NBA team. It's been incredible.
I just it hurts as a Lakers fan. It's just like the weirdest trade. And everyone says, oh, it was just like LeBron making the trade. Maybe. And if that's the case, you just have to say you have to do what LeBron says. So it probably was just that. But it didn't make sense when it happened. The argument was this, last thing, and then we can move on. The argument was this might work because you could play AD, Anthony Davis, at the 5, LeBron at the 4. Russ is your point guard, but really you can have two wings and shooters on the floor with those guys, and like you could probably make it work. And they've just been like starting DeAndre Jordan most of the time at center with AD. And then LeBron's, he hasn't been playing in the last couple of weeks, but like, that just like, they already needed spacing and shooting. And the scary part to me is Carmelo Anthony shooting like 52% from 3 this year, scoring 20 a game off the bench. And like, they're barely winning games or they're losing. Like, there's no way Melo's going to be that good the whole way. Like, I don't know, man, it's, we'll see what happens, but they're probably pretty overrated from a market perspective. I know they've already dropped to like 5.5 to 1. they're not winning the NBA title often enough. And AD and LeBron are just, you know, they're fragile. They're not staying healthy anyways.
Your Twitter handle is Sports Cheetah. Where'd that come from?
Sure. So like years ago when I was in college, we'd go to Vegas every first weekend of March Madness with some friends, and they wanted to bet some college basketball games. I was already starting to dive into betting, and they were betting like $5 or $10 a game, like super small. But I just remember like we won like 4 or 5 games straight. I remember the last one was like a big George Mason upset as a low seed, big underdog win. And like one of my friends just out of the blue just like blurted the Sports Cheetah, and I have no clue why he just like said that, and it was like funny. Then like fast forward like months later, I was writing an article for Todd Furman, for those that know who that is.
Todd is has been a guest of the Rambling and Gambling podcast, friend of the show. Yeah.
So Todd's like, well, what Twitter handle do you want to use? And I didn't want to use my personal one, like at Preston Johnson or whatever. So I was like, all right, I got to make like my sports betting handle. And the first thing that came to mind was, oh, Sports Cheetah, from like my friend who blurted that out once in Vegas. And I just made that. And then the rest is history. But there's really nothing crazy behind it other than it was a nickname for like 10 seconds one time. And that's that. Yeah.
It's a cool nickname. I like it. All right, last one I have for you. I know you're incredibly busy. One of my go-to questions here. What is some advice that you wish you had gotten when you were first starting out gambling?
Ooh. It doesn't go with my nothing's a lock point and like be careful point, but I should have been betting more. Like more. If you know you have an edge, I came from poker where I'd have like 6 tables up online playing like 1-2, no limit, very methodical. Like this is my buy-in at this stakes, playing this many tables, and this is my win rate, you know, X amount of big blinds per hour. And like very bankroll management, like exact. And then Black Friday happened. You couldn't play poker online anymore. I had this bankroll from poker and I was like, I should start betting sports. I've always loved sports. And it took me like 2 years to really like not, you know, to actually gain an edge and I think figure out how to play and beat sports. But once I got to that point, I still was like super methodical and betting like pretty small relative to what I should have been for what my edge was, you know, like 10, 11 years ago. So if you're doing your own stuff, you're winning, you're tracking your CLV, right? Like your closing line value, what you're betting versus where it closes. And you see like a pattern over a really good sample, say it's 1 or 2 seasons, then you should absolutely be finding ways to just get as much liquidity down as possible, because your edges, they dry up, they disappear. Market gets more efficient over time. And I could have capitalized a lot more in a few different areas that I didn't, because I was just trying to be more like cautious, like grinder type. And I cost myself probably doing it that way. So that's probably the one thing, honestly, the greedy, like I should have won more money than I did type answer is, but it's unique. I don't think most people would say, wish I was betting more. It's like kind of contrary to most people say like, oh, I wish they had told me to like be more, you know, practical about my bankroll management. I was just like so trained in that already with poker that I was too conservative early.
Interesting. That is the first time we've gotten that. And I just want to be clear. This is advice that you're giving out for people who actually have an edge, who actually know what they're doing. And I think you just said that.
It's really hard for people to even know if they do. So that's why I was trying to make it clear. Like if you're tracking everything and you're out there, those that know, then yeah, you probably should be betting more or find people to like stake you or, you know, network with some people, try to do it that way. If you don't have the liquidity yourself. Cause once I started doing that, like, exponentially things got a lot better for me. And so, yeah, that's what I would recommend. But again, 99% listening probably doesn't really pertain to them, but there's probably a few people out there that know if they're doing well. And especially like someone actually DM'd me, I'm not going to say who, just random person earlier today asked, he's like, hey, I've bet like 200 and sorry, I'm going to look it up. It's worthwhile. And then we can wrap it up. I apologize.
Hey man, we can go. I'm worried about your time. We can go as long as you want.
No, this is good. So he told me how many bets. All right. So he's made 98 wagers so far on college basketball totals. He said 90% of them he's had closing line value. He calculated his CLV. It's like 5.4%. His ROI, though, is negative 10.3%. He was asking me, like, what, you know, is 5.4% CLV, is that enough to, like, beat college basketball totals?
CLV, by the way, because we do have some really new gamblers in this. Closing sure. line value, ROI, of course, return on investment. Go ahead, Preston.
Yeah, so, like, if he's betting an over 141 that closes 144.5, like, that's going to be a good bet more often than not. It's still going to lose, like, 44 or 43% of the time, whatever that number is. And so that's what's part of, like, variance. Like, he's wondering, like, all right, 98 wagers, like, what kind of sample is that? Honestly, that's a pretty small sample. First thing I told him was, like, yeah, that's a small sample. You should definitely be up money. Your ROI should definitely be positive if you're getting 5.4% CLV, especially in a market like college basketball totals, which is one of the softest left of, like, kind of the major sports. And so I thought that was just good. He's trying to, like, figure out how to calculate his stuff and go from there. But yeah, so for those that are trying to do that, they're tracking, that's just a really good way to gauge where you're at from a betting standpoint. And yeah, I forget why what you brought up or what question you asked that led me to bring that up, but it's all the same.
No, you nailed it. It was just advice for people who are starting out. And I think that's really good advice. Anything else you want to hit on, man? Anything else you want to cover?
No, I don't think so. No, I appreciate the time. It's fun getting on and talking with new people.
Appreciate your time. This was a fun one. Preston Johnson, founder of Betts TV. You can find him on Twitter at Sports Cheetah. You were awesome, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yep. Thanks, Josh. Take care.
Episode 15, almost in the books. Real quick, I do want to give a huge thank you to my brothers, Eric and Jeremy, who made me a really cool rambling and gambling sweatshirt that I am currently wearing. I know most people listen to this pod, although we do post clips on social, and sometimes we'll post full episodes on YouTube, but the sweatshirt's awesome. I'll post it on social, and shout out E and Squirt. Very thoughtful gift. Hope you lovable loser listeners enjoyed this one as much as I did. Thanks for rating, subscribing, and reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought of this one, this format. Should we do more like this? We'll see you next Wednesday. As always, everybody, have a great week.